And good morning. It is Wednesday, August the 14th, 2019, 15 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're tuned into The Early Show. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. The start of our programming day today, which will be followed by The Charlie Evers Show, 10:10 until 12 noon, and A Progressive Life with Glenn Coble today, 12:10 to 1 p.m., and Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman, 4:10 to 5 p.m. in the Trinity Baptist Church. Sunday sermon will be on tonight, 6:10 to 7 p.m. Now, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping here so we can keep people informed of some events going on in Marion. 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, will have an open house at her museum on August 31st from 2 to 4 p.m. The museum is located at Primrose Retirement Community here in Marion, 1550 Wellness Drive. This event is free admission, so everybody can come out. And Mary Ellen will be there to take your questions on any pictures or artifacts you might see at this event. It's Mary Ellen Withrow's Museum, open house August 31st, 2 to 4 p.m. And tomorrow on this program from 9 to 10 a.m. as the school year approaches, we will be joined by the superintendent of the Marion City Schools. So that should be a lot of fun. Now today, we're going to talk about an event coming up very quickly here in Marion on Thursday, tomorrow. It is Second Chances, 1 year in Ohio's Drug Courts. It's tomorrow, 6 p.m., Marion Palace Theater. Doors open at 5:30. This event, again, is free and open to the public, which is great. There's going to be a lot going on, including opening remarks made by Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. So a lot to talk about here, and we have two gentlemen in with us this morning who can tell us a lot about this event coming up tomorrow night. James Boland, Special Dockets Coordinator for the Marion Probation Department, and Tom Stotz, Probation Officer with the Marion Probation Office. Thank you both for coming in this morning. We appreciate it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now, Tom, how did this event come about?
Well, so back in 2017,
correct.
The Ohio Channel approached Marion Municipal Court to see if we wanted to be involved in a documentary along with two other courts in Ohio. And so we accepted, and it ended up being Marion Municipal Court, Medina County Common Pleas Court, and Hocking County Municipal Court. So the documentary ran from 2017 to 2018, and they did filming, and then it took about a year to put the documentary together. And the documentary just rolled out a few months ago.
So this is a documentary, real people, real things that have happened here in Marion and other areas in Ohio.
Correct. Yes.
James, what is the documentary about, per se?
Well, on its surface, it's titled 1 Year in Ohio's Drug Court. So it's about the drug court model and the experience of individuals within the drug court. But, you know, in reality, it's about the participants in that court. It's about there's three or four people who are featured heavily in the film, and it's about their journey in recovery and how the interaction with the courts and the legal system sort of helped them on their way with that.
Now, for somebody who hasn't been involved or doesn't have a family member involved in anything like this, what typically happens? Or is there any typical happening?
No, I'd like to say there's typical, but there is not. Right. There are multiple treatment courts or drug courts across the state of Ohio, and each one of them slightly different. However, there are sort of standard procedures that each one has to follow. People come into them in varying ways, but drug courts are specifically a criminal justice system model, so someone has to be involved in the criminal justice system. So someone has to be either charged or convicted of a crime. In Marion, we're a post-conviction docket, so someone has to actually have pled guilty to the charge, been found guilty, and placed on supervised probation. Then if it's determined through assessments such as the ORAS or other assessments that their substance use is a contributing factor to their criminal behavior, we can recommend that they go into the treatment court because we can treat the causes of their criminal behavior.
So, now, what is treatment court like?
Treatment court is a intensive supervisory program within the probation department, requiring participants to get an accurate diagnosis, get into treatment specific to that diagnosis, to appear before the judge at least once a week initially, and then every other week as they go through the program. They meet with their probation officer 2 to 3 times a week. They're in intensive treatment and out in our community partners in Marion, so they're going to treatment possibly daily in some cases.
Now, when a documentary is being put together, you don't know what'll end up in the documentary,
yes,
what won't end up in the documentary. Now that it's finished, what do you make of it?
I thought it was very well done. Ann Fife was the producer for the Ohio Channel. She did a really good job. I had learned that she really didn't know what a drug court was either. So she came into it sort of blind, and so she didn't cherry pick certain elements of the court. So she was able to follow the participants, and I think she did a really good job of focusing not on the court and the procedures of court, but focusing on those individuals and the way that they were trying to change their lives.
Tom, what did you make of the final product?
I thought it was a very professional product. I liked for the fact that it gave the public a chance to see how a drug court operates. Like he said, it's like in real time, so there's not cherry-picked events. I like the fact that the folks going through the documentary were able to speak candidly about their take of the program. And then I like the fact that it was able, to highlight Marion as well, to kind of put Marion on the map, so forth, to show what programming we have going on here. So,
now, how did this event tomorrow night come about?
Well, so the video was rolled out, the documentary. It was opened up, and so we wanted a chance to be able to showcase it to the public in Marion. And so I had thought about the Palace Theater, and so we went to the Palace Theater to see if this is something we could make happen. And, with their busy schedule, they said, hey, we have this date open. So that's kind of how it came about. I just kind of went to them and said, hey. And then from then, we got a hold of the Ohio Channel because we had to get, make sure the permissions were fine to show it. And the Ohio Channel's like excited about it and said, hey, we want to come and participate this. And then the Supreme Court got wind of it and said, we want to come and participate in this. Because it was kind of a joint adventure, because in order to be a special docket, you have to be certified through the Supreme Court. And so that's kind of how it all came together. Yeah. So we want to showcase it.
It was actually, it was actually kind of interesting, the amount of interest we got once we announced we were going to do it, and the amount of people who wanted to be involved in displaying the movie.
Now, Chief Justice O'Connor, who will be giving the opening remarks, what is her particular interest in this subject? Is she very interested in this, more than other Chief Justices, or was she just the representative?
Well, I don't know necessarily if her interest is any more than, but the Supreme Court it's the essential role in these treatment courts in Ohio. And we're not just speaking about drug courts, we're talking about veterans treatment courts, DUI courts, DWI courts, mental health dockets, whatnot. The Chief Justice is one of the primary supporters of these programs within the state of Ohio. And then the Commission on Specialized Dockets through the Ohio Supreme Court is the entity that sort of certifies the dockets. So you have to go through you have to apply, and then they come in and inspect your court and make sure you're meeting the best practice standards.
Now, also, after this event, there will be members of the Marion Municipal Drug Treatment Court holding a panel discussion, giving the audience a chance to ask questions. Do we know who will be on this panel?
We're hoping to. We haven't confirmed all of the drug court participants in the film. We haven't confirmed all of their attendance, but we're hoping to have quite a few of them. We know we have the judge. We'll have Ann, myself, the current drug court probation officer, members from both Mary Haven and Mac. They're the two treatment entities assigned to the drug court here in Marion.
So when you are, if you plead guilty and you are now set to do whatever you're set to do. If it's drug court, what exactly is the drug court's goal, would you say?
Drug court's goal is to, you know, return these individuals to being citizens in Marion. It's not to sort of get them out of the consequences or let them not experience the penalties. They did commit crimes. They have been convicted. But in drug court participants and other treatment models, we can assign a particular cause to that, something we can treat. If we just throw the individual in jail, we're not treating that illness. So the goal is to return them to being active members of the community. You know, the old phrase, taxpaying citizens. I want them out of the court's roles. I don't want to see them in probation anymore. I don't want to see them in court anymore. Retail theft is a significant number of the crimes committed by these individuals. I don't want to see them in the stores. I want them to be able to go into the stores and actually purchase items and walk out with those items and not, you know, have to live this cycle of theft, arrest, incarceration, rinse and repeat.
How long does this process take?
Typical drug court lifespan is 12 to 18 months, and that's if someone is going through it and hitting all of the marks right on time. It's usually, we find, about 18 months to 2 years.
You know, something I always wonder about, if somebody is obviously pled guilty to a drug crime and they're attending drug court and they are not incarcerated, how do they find a job? Is it hard to find a job?
It is.
Yeah.
It is very hard to find a job. So in the treatment court models, we build in mechanisms to assist with that as they go on. Actually, we find in Marion, the theft charge is almost as significant as a felony. And these are misdemeanor theft charges. These can prevent or create barriers to employment as much as a felony charge. So we will refer to and advocate for these individuals and programs around the community, because if we can't help them get employment, how do we expect them to become responsible taxpaying citizens? So,
well, that's something you hear around Marion, and I'm sure other places as well, is there are a lot of jobs now and people want to hire, but people can't pass drug tests, they can't pass background checks. And how do you overcome that?
Well, in the drug court model, by the time we're looking, we don't prevent people from getting employment in the early stages. We do, however, discourage it, because the intensity of the treatment, the intensity of all of the other things we're trying to do. And we have mechanisms in place to kind of assist them with that. However, once they're getting into the later phases of the program and they're doing less intensive treatment and they're integrating into the community more, they can pass the drug screens, because they're passing them for court and they're passing them for treatment. So that's not really a barrier to employment. It is that criminal record aspect, though.
Right.
So with the treatment agencies, they have built in sort of employment referral programs, employment advocacy programs, and then there are other programs within the community that we refer to.
For people who come out and see this documentary tomorrow, what do you hope they take away from it?
I'm really hoping that it reduces a significant amount of the stigma of these individuals. Addiction is very much a disease, even though the initial act is a choice. Once addiction kicks in, it's a disease, and it's treatable, and we can treat it. But we expect people to make these changes, but if the community doesn't change their perception and welcome them back in, we kind of reduce all the motivation or remove all the motivation for these individuals to have changed it in the first place. If they can't be reintegrated in society because, you have a history of criminal activity. Well, you know, that shouldn't be the barrier to them being part of this community, being productive in this community, being happy in this community, raising their children in this community. Also, I want people to have a better understanding of what we do in drug courts. There's a lot of sort of misinformation that floats around about what drug courts are and what we do, and that we're letting people get away with things, and that we're, you know, throwing gift cards and rewards at people for being criminals, and that's just very much not true. So,
what is the biggest misconception? Because you do hear a lot of these misconceptions.
Yeah, the biggest misconception is that it's in, and this is an old term, but the hug a thug mentality, that we are somehow, by addressing the actual issues going on in this person's life and addressing the motivations for their criminal behavior, that somehow we're not holding them accountable. we very much are holding people accountable for this. Once there's an accurate diagnosis and once there's a plan put in place, everyone's held accountable for their participation in that plan. That includes the judge and myself and the other officers in treatment, and then very much so, and first and foremost, the participant. You know, we give them the resources to do it and then very much expect them to do it and make some changes.
Tom, what would you hope people walk away saying after they see this documentary tomorrow?
I hope they walk away saying, wow, I didn't really realize what was going on in the municipal court. I thought a drug court was this, but now I understand it's this. You know, I've had some folks mention, you know, that we put people through a class. Well, a drug court's not a class. It's not a one-day-a-week class and you're done and you get a reward. It's typically a year-long, possibly longer event. It's a legal procedure that involves a judge, you know, and a treatment team and has probation services and so forth and treatment services. So it's not just a class. I want folks to come away saying, wow, I thought it was this, but now I realize it's this.
How, I imagine it's very hard to help somebody break these patterns if they're addicted. How can that be done?
Notice the silence.
Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of facets. I mean, it takes, you know, if you're dealing with addiction and, you know, you got to rely on, hopefully you have family support, you know, you're using your sponsors. You maintain your employment. There's a lot of support services, and if the folks use those tools, they can be successful. So, you know, we talk about, you know, people, places, and so forth. So, you know, hanging out with the right people, going to the right places, and sometimes people get steered the wrong direction sometimes, and could have a relapse, and so. But we kind of ingrain those. That's part of the going through the drug court is, you know, looking at the underlying areas, why people are using drugs, not just focusing on their addiction, but why are they using? Do they have childhood trauma? Are they in a family situation? Is there something medical going on? So we want to treat those issues, treat the addiction, and then show them a path how they can stay sober.
What is the number one cause of this, or is it widespread across the board, why people get on drugs?
I don't believe there's one particular answer to that. I mean, there are individuals, and we all know countless individuals who've recreationally used in their teen years or college or whatever, and then they didn't have an issue. We all know people who have consumption of alcohol and still maintain jobs and employment. The disease of addiction is very much dictated by a genetic predisposition and then the environment in which you develop that. You know, so if you have the genetic predisposition and then you recreationally use in your youth, your significantly higher chances are that you're gonna develop a problem with substance use. I wish we could identify or pinpoint one cause for addiction and one cause of why it messes up these people's lives so much and not these individuals. But there just isn't. And I think Tom brought on a good point. You know, it is very much not that individual. It's the community. It's everyone around them. It is the people, places, and things. And we're expecting people to change every single one of those things. And that's a big ask. And sometimes it's entire families. If the entire family unit is using or not supportive of this person's efforts in recovery, we're going to ask them to change that family unit. You know, and kind of remove themselves from that because it puts them at risk. So.
Again, this documentary, Second Chances, 1 Year in Ohio's Drug Courts, will be shown tomorrow night, Thursday night, August 15th, 6 p.m., the Marion Palace Theater. Doors open at 5:30, and it is free and open to the public. Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor will be giving the opening remarks. Tom, is there a section of this documentary that sticks out in your mind as the most important thing you saw?
I think hearing, you know, one of the individuals talk in there how much this has helped her. Had it not been for this had it not been for this docket, who knows where she would be. So, you know, there's, you know, some diary room sessions in there, and some of those are memorable to me, listening to the folks be candid and talk about, you know, the struggles they're going through, and if it hadn't been for this docket, you know, who knows where they would be.
James, what stuck out to you?
Again, and I'd have to echo what Tom said. It was one of the individual participants' comments about how she came to addiction, and she's pretty heavily featured in the film, Timmy, and you'll hear it. There were things that came out there, and I'd worked with her for years while she was in the program, and there were things I learned about her that I didn't know prior to watching the movie. So it was it just, you know, humanized her even more, and talked about the struggle that these, before they even come to us, before they even come to the drug court system, there's a story there. There's a person, a human being, and a citizen who comes to the criminal justice system. And, you know, I think that's what you do in criminal justice. You help people restore their lives. We want people to stop committing crimes. We want people to not be in the system. It costs us a lot of money to have people go through the system, you know, if nothing else. But also, the more active, productive citizens I have around me, the better off we all are.
Tom, what exactly, just so we can kind of give people a little look into the probation office, what exactly is your job there, and what do you do day to day?
So my job is the chief probation officer. I manage the operations of the office. I have, 10 staff there. We have, the probation department's made up of, we have a front desk that helps folks that come in the office. We have a diversion program. In addition to the drug court program, James also operates a veterans court program and a mental health court program. We have a standard probation, which is more an intense type probation, and then we have a low level probation. And so there's just many facets going on. And so we just make sure that the office runs smooth and, you know, we're all doing what we're supposed to do.
When you're on probation, how often do you have to meet with somebody?
Well, that kind of depends. So, we have, the lower level probation, which is like a compliance probation, do this and then you're finished. And so those folks typically may report, once every 3 months or so, checking in once they complete their court order, and then they can kind of move on their way. The more intense type probation are folks that go through an intake screening, and we do a risk assessment, which is known as the Ohio Risk Assessment System, ORAS. And so when we do an assessment, typically you're going to score low, moderate, or high. And so typically the folks that score high, you may see them once a week, and folks that are moderate, you may see them every 2 weeks to once a month. And then the low folks, you may see them once a month, maybe to every once every 3 months. And so we don't want to mix our low people with the high people. So, our low people are not coming in as much because, they could learn things from the high folks. So
what would you, when you see somebody that often, do any type of relationships develop, friendships?
I wouldn't say friendships. We have, professional relationships. So, especially when you have somebody coming in, a year or longer and so forth, you want to develop a rapport, and you want to have a trusting relationship. So, folks who report to their probation officers want to trust that their probation officer is doing what they're supposed to be doing and giving them the accurate information and helping them to the best of their abilities. So, but as with anything, we have overdose deaths in the past. And so, so when you have someone who passes away from an overdose, it takes, a vicarious trauma on the probation officer. So it does take a toll. So because you've tried to work with that individual, So there is a professional relationship there, definitely.
I imagine it's a job where there can be a lot of emotion involved when things like that happen, unfortunately. Yeah. James, Special Dockets Coordinator, explain that to us.
I wish I could. it takes a different form in depending on the court and depending on the judge and what's being asked of that individual. With Marion Municipal Court, Tom did allude to the fact that there are three specialized dockets, the Veterans Treatment Court, the Wynn Court, which is our mental health docket, and then our MARC Court, which is Making Accountability and Recovery Count docket. That is our drug court. It is my job to manage those dockets by managing a small staff. I am the lead or primary probation officer for all three dockets. We do have other probation officers attached to those also. We have a specialized dockets clerk, without whom none of this would happen, because she's at the office working right now and I'm here, so getting all the stuff together. My job is to make sure that the dockets... I'm primarily responsible for writing the policy and procedures, the handbooks, getting those certified, making sure I'm meeting all of the criteria through the Ohio Supreme Court, but also through NADCP, which is the National Association of Drug Court Professionals. They are basically anytime you get a federal grant, and we received back in 2017 a BJA grant for the expansion of the docket. So we could go from a maximum 15 people at a time in the docket to 45. So we're currently involved in that expansion. So it's my job to manage the grant, to make sure we're meeting the specifics of the goals that they've set forth there. Then they send in the National Association of Drug Court Professionals to make sure that you're doing it correctly. That's sort of the national training and advocacy wing for specialized treatment courts. Mm-hmm. So it's my job to maintain relationships with them and coordinate all these activities, coordinate graduations, filmings, and you know, other special events in the community.
Tom, how important is it to stay apprised of things going on in the community, paperwork, standards that change, things of that nature?
Well, it's very important. You know, we definitely want to let the community know what we're doing. And as part of this documentary, we're having an open house, you know, at the court. So right afterwards, we're going to announce, hey, if you want to come over and get a tour of the court, you know, if you've never seen behind a judge's bench, come on over. If you've never seen behind the scenes in the clerk of courts, come on over. If you want to see the holding cell, if you've never seen a judge's chambers, if you've never been inside the probation department. So we're going to invite folks over after the documentary to, you know, there'll be some light refreshments and they'll, you know, they can take a tour of the court and kind of see the behind the scenes and so forth. As we want to know, we want to explain folks what each department or each section of the court's responsibility is. And, you know, you go back to standards, you know, the majority of our funding comes from the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. And so we have like 40 some standards we have to meet. Mm-hmm. And so, and we've done really well in those. I think we only miss, I think, 6 standards out of 40 some. So that's not too bad. And so, and we just kind of want the public to know what we're doing.
You know, we hear an awful lot that this is a huge problem. People using drugs. I think it's always been somewhat of a problem. What is there any way to explain the increase in the last 15 years?
If we look at, you know, we look at Ohio, and Ohio is not alone in the United States with this, but the opioid epidemic is a significant factor to this. The availability of opioids, the sort of, and what's, you know, what's being looked at now, the way they were prescribed when they first came out, the way they were marketed, the way doctors use them, and then their sort of availability in the community, I think very much contributed to it. But we can also look at other factors. When towns and you look, although the opioid and other drug epidemic is going into more affluent neighborhoods and more suburban type areas, if you look at the communities that are challenged socioeconomically, drug use is very much attached to sort of an escape. Early adolescent drug use is if you don't feel a part of your community, or you're not engaged in your community, you're not engaged in other activities, there isn't something meaningful going on, you're more likely to turn to drug use. And then you get this situation where it sort of snowballs because people, places, and things. So everyone around you is using, or you grow up in an environment where using is kind of commonplace, and then so you use. So,
again, it's coming up tomorrow night, August the 15th, the documentary Second Chances, 1 Year in Ohio's Drug Courts. It will be doors open at 5:30. The event will start at 6 p.m., the Marion Palace Theater, and it is free and open to the public. Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor will be doing the opening remarks, but there will be a panel taking questions after the event is over and a tour of the probation office and the courts also will be going on. So a lot going on tomorrow night, August 15th at 6 p.m. You know, James, one of the things that we hear a lot is why do people who are on drugs who have committed a crime not go to jail? We want them to go to jail. We want to see them, you know, they broke a crime. People are hardliners on this sort of thing.
Yes, yes. And I would ask the question, and again, I'm speaking from the municipal court perspective here, but I would also ask the question, is it that we want them to go to jail or we want them to stop committing crimes? This is a big answer here. So ideally, we want them to stop committing crimes. I would rather a person not ever come back, so we don't have to worry about that, and our grills are safe on our back porches, and the merchandise at Walmart is safe on the shelves. And the way to do that is to treat the motivating issues here. And in some cases, it's drug use. In other cases, it's thinking errors. And in a lot of cases, it's both. So if we can approach those in sort of interventions while they're on probation, if we can, you know, address the thinking errors, and all probation officers are well-trained in cognitive behavioral interventions. We're not therapists, but we're trained to engage in activities that support whatever other treatment they might be getting or help people examine the decisions they've been making in their life. And if we do those, the evidence is clear that we're going to have people committing less and less crimes and being more productive. If we lock someone up, and let's say a misdemeanor, and it's an M1, which carries a maximum jail sentence of 6 months, so this individual commits a crime, and they go to jail for 6 months, which has happened in the past, they come out, they're no more resourced or no more educated or no more able to handle whatever was going on in their life than 6 months prior. So they come out, and in most cases, any positives they had created in their lives, any support they had in their lives, any job they had in their lives or housing is gone. So now they're even less resourced. And they come back into the community, and in most cases, it's like, well, you know, don't do that again. But we've not enabled them, you know, we haven't, you know, provided them with the skill set to not do that again. And we've actually encouraged them committing another crime, you know, for survival or...
Well, you know, I've often thought about this. If you go to prison and it's not a life sentence and you're going to get out, I would imagine your housing's gone. Mm-hmm. I would imagine maybe even your transportation is gone. You know, we don't have mass transit here in Marion.
We do not.
And probably your job is gone, most likely. So what do you do the day you walk out of prison if you don't have mom and dad waiting to take you in?
Yeah, it's... In a lot of cases, and especially in prison, there's some re-entry. So you go to probation. So you've done all this time in jail, and you go to probation anyway. In prison, there are re-entry programs that help you reintegrate into the community, but those are, you know, obviously more resourced in larger communities. And then, you know, those don't set you up for success. They basically just give you a place to rest your head and then kind of tell you to go out and fix things. In Marion, there's very little of that. We do have a great reentry program through Common Pleas Court, but again, I deal with the misdemeanor aspects of it. So when someone goes to jail, they're not, you know, there's no way they're going to do a life sentence. It's 6 months maximum. When they come back into the community, we have to rebuild all these things. So in most cases, when they're coming out, they're in crisis mode. They're not in restructuring or rebuilding mode. They're in I need to survive today mode. I need to find a place to live. And in most cases, they go back to the people that in places they knew before. And those are not exactly the most productive and positive environments.
In the community, by and large, are you ever off the hook? Once you've been in prison, once you have a record, as we would say, are you ever totally off the hook?
Well, I think states are looking at that and changing their laws and the way they allow individuals with felony records to you know interact in the community. And this is not my area of expertise, so I really can't do that. But now there is a stigma. I mean, there's a major stigma among it because the attitude is, well, I lived my whole life and I didn't commit a crime and they did, so therefore they're less than or they're others. but again, and I, you know, I got to come back to where I was before, that if we don't give them the opportunity, if we don't allow them to overcome that past, and we don't welcome them back into the community, they're not going to be part of the community, and then therefore they don't feel that communal obligation that all of us do when we go to work every day and don't commit crimes and don't do drugs. You know, if we don't offer them the opportunity to overcome a past that may have included those things and welcome them back, why would they do it?
So. Drug court being an option, if somebody does, because a lot of people will listen to this program and they will say, I would rather see these people go to jail. If you go to jail, prisons used to be called, you know, rehabilitation centers, that yes. you were going in there and you were going to come out better than what when you went in. For somebody who hasn't been in prison, is that still the case? Does that happen?
Prisons do have programmings in them, and you can get your GED and other programs, but more often than not, prison is you are learning the antisocial aspects. You're not learning the pro-social ones. And again, it's up to the individual inmates if they take advantage of these programs and then how they apply them to their lives as when they come out. But again, even when they come out, the communities need to welcome them. The communities need to surround around them in a way that encourages them to continue progressive, you know, positive progress within the community. But again, getting back to municipal court, there's no rehabilitation in the county jail. It's a county jail. You go there and you sit, and if you're lucky, you work the kitchen, or you know, you do some of the other jobs. You get to mow the lawn outside, but it's a county jail. It's not a rehabilitative program. It's meant to just keep people away from us for a second. So. And it's common knowledge that right now the jail is significantly overcrowded, and we cannot keep people in jail, people with mandatory jail sentences for OVIs, where they've actually endangered the lives of other individuals, get turned away for their commitments because there's no room in the jail because we are continuing to occupy it with, you know, low-level offenders or offenders who committed thefts, crimes that basically don't put health and safety at risk but are nuisance crimes. It's better served for those individuals with nuisance crimes or low-level crimes, nonviolent offenders, to be in the community learning different ways to interact in the community than to sit in jail and frankly, talk to other criminals, conspire with other criminals, waste their time, and do drugs, because there's drugs in jail. So.
Now, that's a big thing. Now, and I'm sure we don't know the why to this, but... You know, people, I think they think, well, jail, gee whiz, that's police officers mm-hmm. and sheriff's deputies and people. How does that happen? How do people get drugs into jail?
There are many ways people get drugs into jail. Because it is a staffing issue, it is a monitoring issue, and the jail, our jails, just recently enacted higher security measures. They now have scanners and other things, and staff are more and more trained. Believe me, if people want to get drugs in somewhere, it doesn't matter whether it's jail or wherever, they're going to get drugs in there. And so if that's the environment of a jail, I would rather my people not go there if it's a treatment issue. If it's a criminal issue, if this person is just refusing to engage in anything we've put in front of them, they're criminally oriented, and no amount of substance use treatment or cognitive behavioral therapy is going to affect that, then they don't get access to those programs. They don't get put in drug courts. We don't put drug dealers in drug courts. We put, you know, people with substance use disorders in drug courts because we can treat that. Drug dealing is a criminal choice that puts other people at risk and should be jailed. You know, violent crimes, domestic violence, assault, those are crimes where people do need to be kept away from the public for a while. We need to, and this is one of our favorite sayings in criminal justice, you know, we incarcerate those we're afraid of, not those we're mad at.
That's interesting. You know, because there has been a county around here that became very popular and very well known on a lot of Ohio news channels and was written up a lot of places because the judge started to send more people to jail than previous judges. And it seems here in Marion County, like in the last, since the last election, that might be more of the case here in Marion County. Have you seen a change?
I've seen that attitude has very much been adopted by our common police court, and I understand that completely, and I understand the community sentiment, and obviously there's a lot of backing for that. However, when you look at this from a municipal court level, where we're actually trying to prevent people from committing these felonies, or we're trying to get them off of that path, or they've committed felonies before and now they're committing misdemeanors again, which is a huge indication that they're going to commit more felonies later on down the road. We're trying to interrupt that cycle. And if incarcerating people was a deterrent to crime, I wouldn't have a job, because we've been incarcerating people for a very long time, and I'm not seeing any evidence that that deters anyone from doing anything. We have record numbers of people in prison in this country. We have record numbers of people in jail in this country. Municipal court can't put anyone in jail because we're full. It's obviously not been a significant enough deterrent in this county for crime, and especially the nuisance property crimes. A lot of our people are drug paraphernalia charges, or retail theft from the stores out on 95. We have to come up with something else. I mean, if for one, because it's just obviously not working. Where the jails and the prisons are full. If that were a deterrent to crime, literally, I would not have a job. Also, it's expensive. The jail being overcrowded now necessitates that violent criminals and others who need to be incarcerated, or others, just the nuisance crimes who we're now locking up, people awaiting trial, people who haven't bonded out yet, pretrial situations, these individuals are being shipped to other counties. And in those counties, we're paying, I believe it's $40 to $70 per day per person to house them. And specialty dockets? All the latest studies showed it costs about $7 to $10 a day, and we reduce recidivism in the best courts by between 40% and 45%.
Now, I you may not have an exact number here, but a ballpark: how many people at this point, as we sit here talking about this, with this documentary being shown tomorrow, are being shipped to other counties at that expense?
That I do not know.
Is it a high number? Would you say?
It's not a high number. I believe we have, and again, this is not, I'm not, don't quote me on this one. I'll put it out there. Anyone who knows, please call in and let us know. I believe it's somewhere in the area of 30.
30.
Yes. So, but it's only going to get worse. We have people waiting. We have people who are waiting to do jail commitments through municipal court who've gone to the jail for their scheduled commitment 4 to 5 times and been turned away each time. These are people who have regained their place in society, who are working, who've gotten jobs, and now they have to continue to try to take time off to go schedule these, 5-10 days in jail. And yeah, that's the punishment for their crime. But then we're continuing to punish them and actually removing all the good things they have in the community, or possibly removing. It doesn't happen in all cases. But, we're putting those things at risk because we don't have space at the jail, to do these things.
Are employers understanding when somebody says, I have to go away for 10 days?
No.
No.
No. I mean, some of us have that luxury. Some of us have built up vacation time and comp time and personal time, and some of us have those kind of jobs. However, if you look at individuals who are now trying to recover, they're trying to be in recovery and get off drugs and regain a life, they don't have those kind of jobs. They have these factory jobs where they've been placed through a temp agency and they get point systems, and being late 10 minutes is a significant problem. You go into that office and ask for 10 days off so you can do your mandatory time for your OVI, it's an entirely different story.
You mentioned earlier on, because there is this idea that there's, gift cards given out, and there's a party or some sort and cake and refreshments, and when somebody does something like this and gets through it, is that type of thing going on? Because people have that impression.
To some extent, yes, it is going on. We operate on a reward and sanction system. All dockets have those. If you don't, you're not really a drug court. And all research shows that if you do not highlight the changes that we want them to make, and you don't consistently reward those things with verbal praise and reduced reporting, gift cards are sort of a last resort measure. we have, we will reduce their reporting, take away time on electronic home monitoring devices or the electronic alcohol monitors if they've done well for a time. We'll have them come into court less. We'll let them leave court early. We do have those kind of things. Gift cards, $10 gift card to Subway, or $10 gift card, which, by the way, most of them take the gas cards because they want gas to get to work. They want to pay the person who's been driving them to work. Gift cards. So we do give away gift cards, but we do those specifically to highlight desired changes in behavior. when we notice something that they've done that we've been asking them to do, or that we would like them to do, or they did just independently, we want to highlight that. We want to reward that. We want to point that out. Hey, that's the kind of behavior we're looking for. They've been hearing, oh, you did this wrong, and you didn't do this, and you didn't show up their whole life. They know this, and we hold them accountable for those things. But if all we do is point out what they're doing wrong and not what they're doing correctly and what we want them to do in the future and build on, they don't do it. 4-1 is the best reward to sanction ratio. Evidence has shown that if you want to assist someone in changing behavior and changing their lives, you kind of keep it there. A little more or a little less is fine, but 4-1 is the sweet spot in this whole reward to sanction grid. So you do want to find ways to reward people. And if it's, hey, thank you for showing up on time. You know, oh yeah, they're on probation. They're supposed to show up on time. But what does it harm me to say, hey, thank you for being here on the day you're supposed to be here and on time. That keeps my schedule going. Now let's talk about what I need you to do. It's not a problem. And it costs me nothing. It costs taxpayers nothing. And we get grief for that. Like, why are you thanking them for coming in? They're supposed to. Well, because, you know, I'm trying to have them be more productive, positive, happy citizens, you know.
Do most of these people who go to drug court, does it have a positive ending?
It does. You know, our numbers are lower than they were this time last year as far as individuals who were accepted into the docket and then successfully complete. We're a little under 40% right now. This time last year, I believe we were around 55 to 60%. But because of the nature of accepting only high-risk, high-need individuals, and by risk we don't mean that this is a risky person, but they have significant risk factors in their life that might contribute to recidivism and going back to using, we focus on those who need the most help to change. And so if you look at it, these people were 100% likely to recidivate. There was pretty much 100% chance they were going to commit another crime. They were going to possess drug abuse instruments. They were going to possess drugs. They were going to go to a store and steal. There's 100% chance of that. So if you know, even if at our lowest we're at 40%, if we've taken 40% of the people who come through this program and had it so they're not committing more crimes and they're successful, I'm okay with that.
It's very interesting, and it's going to be a very interesting event. Remember, Second Chances, 1 year in Ohio's drug courts documentary featuring Marion County will be shown at the Marion Palace Theater tomorrow night, August the 15th, 6 p.m. Doors will open at 5:30. This is free and open to the public. Opening remarks by Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. There will be a panel afterwards where people can ask questions, and also a tour of the probation department and courts. We certainly thank Tom Stotch, Chief Probation Officer here in Marion, for joining us this morning, and James Boland, Special Dockets Coordinator. Thanks, James. I hope a lot of people show up tomorrow night.
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I hope so, too.
Appreciate it. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Most show archives are available on the net. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road, phone number 7-4-225-4495, webpage.